Welcome to Florida Capital Tea. My name is Anna Marie, and I'm sitting down today with Dr. Ainiko Williams. She is a specialist in attendance. We're going to go over how attendance affects your students' grades and how it affects the district as well. Before we get into that, I want to do a few housekeeping things. This episode will be published on Sunday, August 30th. On August 24th and 25th of this last week, we had the school board meetings. On Wednesday, August 26th, we had the city commission meeting. And if you want to go back and catch up on either of those meetings, you can check out the organization's websites to find links to those. The city commission also has a link on their YouTube channel to view the last city commission meeting. All right, you ready to get into it?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. So tell us a bit about Dr. Ainiko.
Yes, so thank you all for watching. I'm Ainiko Williams. I've been in education for roughly about 15 years now. Started off in the classroom in Gadsden County at a charter school and then made my way over to Leon as a classroom teacher and a school counselor for several years. Then I bounced around and I was at FECUS as a school counselor for K through 12 for a little bit. Then I moved into leadership in higher education in the state of Florida. I was a state director for college access programs. And now my work exclusively focuses on attendance policies and practice around the country.
Oh, wow. So you've seen like the whole spectrum from all the way over in Gadsden, all the way to Leon County, and now you're doing across the country.
That's right. Yeah.
And you said your specialty is in attendance.
Yes.
So do you do like research with that? Like what kind of...
Yeah, so in my area, I oversee the policy arena. So I do our goal is to understand what are the best practices across school districts and state education agencies. And we compile this annual report every year with recommendations to those who can influence policy. Again, on the state level, we've consulted with the U.S. Department of Education and their folks, and just everyone from classroom teachers, again, to folks in D.C. Mm-hmm. And we also do a lot of technical assistance. So we go into the schools and we have multi-year contracts where we support school administrators, school counselors, teachers, attendance clerks around, again, how to get kids back in school because we've seen those numbers double post-pandemic. Yeah. And we're slowly on the decline, but there's still a lot of work left to do.
And Leon County, have you worked with Leon County at all? Because I know that they're struggling with their attendance and they've talked a lot about their attendance here and how do we get it up? We've done a logo. we're doing a recruiting service to try to get kids back into the school.
So Florida is not one of our target states. Florida's got a lot of work to do when you compare it to other states like Connecticut, New Mexico, Ohio. They're doing really amazing work and seeing drastic decrease in their chronic absenteeism numbers. Leon County has one of the highest chronic absent rates in the state of Florida, and it continues to climb every year. I do volunteer some of my assistants with a local elementary school where they're implementing evidence-based practices to support students to come to school. But a lot of my work is unfortunately outside of Florida, hopefully at some point, I know there's works underway to move some legislation statewide. Something very basic is how do you define attendance in the state of Florida? Mm-hmm. And because it's left up to local discretion, there are many different definitions. So when you're looking at district data across the state, you're essentially comparing apples to oranges. So Florida has
I didn't know that about the attendance. Wow. So one district could define it one way and another district could define it a completely different way is what you're saying.
That's right. And then, I mean, even in Leon County, I remember I've asked questions of what does it mean to be present in schools in Leon County? And I didn't quite get an answer, right? So what is the definition? Is it half a day? Is it the first three periods? What does it mean to be present? And I have not received an answer from district officials on that. So,
I mean, I feel like that's kind of what you have to do first is define what attendance is. And I printed out some of the policies for us here. I mean, we have the policy here. And whenever I went through it, I guess I really didn't notice where it had a definition of what attendance was. It just talks about failure to report attendances and explain absences. And it just kind of goes into, you know, what unexcused absences, but does it even say really like what an unexcused absence is?
I believe that's left to, maybe school administrators. That's the site level. But again, how can we compare numbers across the data to understand which schools are making improvements and which is not, if we do not have at least a simple definition of what does it mean to be present in our community? And so that's, again, a very basic policy that has not been addressed by the board nor the district.
Wow. What would your definition of absence be?
Well, it depends. I would say at least 50% of the school day. Okay. I think that's what we see most states. That's how most states define attendance across their state. At least half a day, and that counts you as you were present for the day.
Okay. And that should get you enough to do your work too, right? And then we were talking a little bit too, a little bit before this about getting homework and being able to get homework and take it home. What is your views on that as far as
being able to take homework home
or not homework, but like, if you miss a day, can you get your work from if you missed it or for whatever reason?
Well, that's a good question. So that's another area that we are exploring versus like excused absence versus unexcused absence. Okay. So you may have two students who miss school for the same reason. So for instance, child A and B missed school because they were sick. Mm-hmm. Child A may not be able to have access to a healthcare provider. Mom may work a night shift and may not be able to get that absence excuse versus child B has access to resources and can see their primary care doctor and have an excuse. So now what we've done is create, there's now a disparity between a child who maybe lives in a lower, experiences poverty and challenges accessing resources, and they may not be able to make up their assignments versus child B, who has access to the resources and the makeup dates because the mom, say mom can, you know, again, take them to the primary care physician and get X amount of days off. So a lot of the policies that we see across districts and sometimes states, it perpetuates, again, disparities because of, again, what's written in the policy and how it unintentionally punishes students who are experiencing poverty.
And if you've never been in that situation and you've never been that parent or that student
right.
who didn't have access, you may not even notice that this policy is prohibiting those students from being able to actually access their schoolwork and having the same ability as everyone else.
Yes, and that's correct. So, and when we think about policy, we think about, again, school administrators who may come from a certain class of background and, you know, they understand. I know we're going to talk about the God being the ISS issue.
Yeah.
And then we come in and those administrators impose these rules and sanctions that, again, unintentionally punishes students for being poor or having mental health challenges or having to take care of siblings and getting to school late. Or maybe their only means of getting breakfast is stopping at Chick-fil-A. And instead of addressing what the root cause of why students are late or absent, they are punished for it.
Okay. So you mentioned Gabby. So let's jump into Gabby because that is something that I've been kind of following a little bit too. And I'm really curious, what are your thoughts on the Gabby policy?
Yeah. So I am strongly against imposing ISS as an intervention. Okay. ISS is not an appropriate intervention specifically for students at Godby, unless you have done the pre-work. Mm-hmm. I think the first step is to understanding why students are late. Why are they tardy? So Godby High School has one of the highest chronic absenteeism rates in the district, and they have consecutively for, I think, 5 years now. I'm sure if you go back, we're looking at like 61% last year where students, again, are not showing up consistently. So the data shows that there are already obstacles and barriers to getting to school. And again, using ISS as a first initial step as an intervention, I think is highly inappropriate. And again, I think it unintentionally punishes students who are experiencing barriers and challenges to going to school. So I did receive a lot of phone calls from parents, teachers, and of course, parents are against the policy and teachers are, I've been told, they're just hanging out, you know, they're not coming to class. And while I understand that can be very frustrating, I was a classroom teacher. I did have students that show up late. We have to shift from having a adult-centered perspective and centering our students. Oh. And that's, in my opinion, that should be the priority.
Yeah. And I have seen some, I guess, proponents for this say that they've seen an increase in attendance because of this. What is that, a false increase? Is that something that you think is sustainable?
I don't even think we're 4 weeks into school yet.
Yeah.
So while I don't want the community to confuse compliance with change behavior, right? So I think from what I've heard is they're trying to instill these principles of being on time. And I'm not negating that that's that's not important. But again, the in my opinion, my professional opinion, the first appropriate step would have been done, would have for the administrators to do an analysis of why kids are missing.
Yeah.
Sitting down, having listening sessions with, say, the top 10% of students who are tardy or chronically absent, having those conversations, doing like a fishbone diagram and digging deeper to understand why. Mm-hmm. I used to live about...
I'm sorry, what's a fishbone diagram?
Well, it's just digging deeper. So okay. I'm late because I pick up Starbucks in the morning. Well, why is that? Well, and you go deeper. Well, okay. We don't have breakfast at home. I stop and I grab something because it's easier. Again, just kind of digging deeper and understanding why. Again, it might be a bus. The school bus may have broken down. So I had a parent from, I believe it was Lincoln, shared that she has an AP student who rides the school bus, and the school bus was late and she was still sent to ISS. And so you create, you know, the whole Starbucks and Chick-fil-A example, to me, they're the easiest kids to blame and to be angry at. Yeah. We're going to be upset because you're coming in with Starbucks. But again, those blanket policies unintentionally punish students whose bus has broken down, or it's raining outside and there is not a safe pathway to walk to school. So we're just going to wait until, you know, 45 minutes past the hour when the rain subsides to walk to school. So I used to live about 7 minutes from Godby, and many of my neighbors' children, again, when it's raining, there's not really a sidewalk.
No, there's not. That goes into the city stuff that we've also talked about a little bit too, is that with the city and Tharp Street, there's not any infrastructure for pedestrians.
Right. And we're talking 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds. And so, I mean, I wouldn't walk.
Walking in a ditch.
Right. Yeah. Essentially to get to school on time. And then when they get to school, they're now receiving instant punishment. We're not having conversation. We're not asking why. It's just, you need to go to ISS for the remainder of the period. And if the goal is to instill that education is important, you cannot punish students by also removing that education and missed instructional time. So it's not evidence-based. Mm-hmm. There's no studies that shows if you punish students, that incentivizes them to show up for school. And so, again, I think there was a lot of missteps that has happened, and this wasn't the appropriate, again, intervention at this time.
Yeah. So what would be, like, I guess, an appropriate intervention for something like this? You said dig deeper, mm-hmm. but let's say a kid is late. How should a teacher or a school handle, hey, this kid is always late? How should they handle that in the moment?
In the moment.
If a kid's coming in and they're late, they're disrupting the class. And that's a lot of the argument that I'm hearing too is, oh, they're coming and they're disrupting the class. Everyone wants a bite of the sandwich or the drink. And so how does a teacher handle that? Is that a classroom management thing, or is that a school thing? Is that a district thing? Like, how would that work?
You know, kids have to feel like they're welcome, right? So when a child walks through that door, we're so glad to see you. We're glad that you're here. I have a friend, and he says, he teaches elementary school. And when the child is absent, he goes, you know, we couldn't have our pizza party yesterday because you weren't here. It's a joke between him and his students. It's okay. We'll try again for tomorrow. So, you know, whether it's establishing a protocol of when you are late, what does it look like to walk into the class quietly? And then we're getting into conduct, right? Mm. This is how you walk into my class if you're late. My expectation is that you're quiet. You walk to the back, you have a seat. And again, if a student doesn't comply, then there are appropriate steps then, because now that becomes a conduct issue.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, if a student is 2-3 hours late, that means you have another 3 hours with them. And as a teacher, I don't want you to miss another minute of instruction, and I want you here. But this is how you're going to walk into my classroom, and you're going to be on time tomorrow. So I think we have to lean more to connection before consequences.
Okay.
We need to connect with our students, build those relationships. Every single child should have a connection to an adult that they can trust in that building. Okay. One of the activities or the strategies, actually did a training out at PACE. I had them print every single girl's name on a wall. and on a piece of paper, and we put it across the training room. And I ask every instructor to walk to the wall and put a check next to the child that they had a close relationship with. And when they were done, we took a step back and I called the names of all the students that did not have a check. Now, the good thing is that there weren't many. I think there were three or four. Most okay. of them were new. But in that school building, they have prioritized relationship building. And so in the event that there is a crisis or something's going on, those girls feel that they can connect with an adult in that building and they feel heard and they feel trusted. And they don't send their kids to ISS when girls have challenges showing up. So that's just one example of, again, how do we make sure that we are connected to our students and we're not isolating and punishing them, and definitely not punishing them with missed instructional time.
Yeah, yeah. Attendance for those girls.
Now, attendance is high. Now, PACE does have girls who experience challenges or they need extra supports. Okay. But again, it's about building those relationships and those connections so that your students want to show up in the building. And when they show up, they don't feel isolated, embarrassed. They don't feel punished, right? Okay. So it's, again, it's connection before correction. So that is, again, that I think building relationships, doing a qualitative and quantitative analysis, again, so understanding the reasons why, and then having teams meet to, again, address the needs of those students, okay. right? And for the educators that are listening, what are your school's tier one attendance strategies? Ms. Clemens out at, remind me, she's at, Sealy, mm-hmm. right? So one thing that she started doing last year was she started talking about what the attendance numbers look like on Facebook, right? So that simple strategy, again, builds awareness in the community.
I need to make sure I'm following them.
Yeah, yeah, and like really pretty graphics. And again, just understanding like, wow, this matters to my child's principal. Yeah. You know, there were only 10 kids absent today, so I don't want my child to be in that 10, right? So that's a simple, again, easy strategy. It builds relationships. It builds awareness. It reminds parents that we need your child here every day. And that's, again, a simple strategy that could be implemented. Okay. I'm yet to see a flyer that shames parents at Sealy for being late or being tardy, right? It's all about encouraging families and relationship building. And again, I've supported Sealy Elementary on their teachers who supported attendance. So again, how do we wrap our hands around families and steer away from, again, punishing students for and
punishing families too, right. You know, and shaming families. Because I know I hear a lot from a lot of parents that, like, I don't know if you remember, it was a few years ago, the district put out flyers about being there because, and they showed, you know, and you're aware of how much attendance helps with grades.
Yes.
And I don't think anyone's arguing that, but some parents really felt like that was like kind of an attack on them. And that was a lot of the feedback that, you know, I was getting, is these parents were like feeling like they were being attacked and they were having situations that they couldn't avoid, mm-hmm. you know, and it's kind of like you're making these people feel bad about something that they really couldn't avoid or they couldn't, you know, couldn't get around.
And it goes back to, again, relationships. They don't feel, you don't know me enough and you don't know my situation enough to judge why my child isn't at school.
Yeah.
And so, again, connections before correction.
Right.
And if the first message about attendance is pointing fingers at students and families, it's not a nice feeling and it's not a welcoming environment that our families want to participate in.
Yeah.
And so when we see these declining enrollments, it's those small little things. Now, I will tell you a story. I admit I am chronically late. sometimes dropping my kids off, right? So maybe that's why I was triggered. And I remember dropping, I have one at public school and one son at private school. And I remember dropping my son off at the private school and we were late. And the first thing, and I wish I remembered her name, she's an older paraprofessional. She goes, "Ivan, you've got brand new shoes on today." Right? Not you're late, aww. Not hurry up and get to class. Like, she noticed that I had bought my son new shoes. And that meant the world to me. Again, it goes back to relationships and connections. Now, the next time we were late, if she wanted to have a conversation with me about me dropping my son off late, I would have been a lot more receptive to it, yeah. Rather than feeling defensive. Because mm-hmm. in my eyes, you care about my son to know that he had a new pair of shoes.
Yeah, on. I mean, that's pretty observant
yeah.
for someone to notice shoes, because we don't always even look at, you know,
right, feet and everything. Right.
So that's that. And that's, I think that
it's something that I learned whenever I was working at the county too, is the wow factor. Mm-hmm. You know, and we talked a lot about the wow factor and how you interact with the community, you know, really can dictate what kind of experience they have. And granted, I was a paramedic, so no one is going to call a different ambulance service, right? No one's going to go to a different public school if they live in Leon County. Right. They're going to go to a Leon County public school. But that wow factor means a lot. And amplifying, you know, the paraprofessionals who notice things like that, amplifying the teachers who take the time to really get to know their students and have a connection with them. I think that's really important too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like, I call it like the Disney World effect. So I heard at Disney, if you ask them, like, what time do you close? They say, well, we're open until whatever time they're open, oh, right? It's that reframing. It's that mind shift. It's, you know, customer service is a high impact, low cost strategy. Well, it's actually free. And so, again, how are we approaching families when they come to us, when they're late, when they've had mistakes? How do you build that relationship with that family as a new administrator, new teacher? I believe wholeheartedly the primary goal should be, again, I'm going to build relationships. I'm going to get to know these families so that I can have what they call like a come to Jesus moment when the time is appropriate. And again, not just whipping out compliance, punishment, and again, making families feel that they're not welcome there.
Yeah. And one thing that I've noticed is that this is applied to Godby, but is it applied to all the other schools? Because that kind of, to me as a parent, I want to know if I go to Godby that this is the rule, but it's also going to be the same rule at Leon. It's going to be the same rule at Childs, so that I know, okay, well, I brought my kid late at Childs and they didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. Well, why is Godby different?
Right, right. And so from my understanding, Joe Burgess at Childs, there is ISS, but it does not occur during the classroom period. Okay. It's, from my understanding, again, it's lunch or Saturday school. And as a parent, that the message that is sent is that education is important here. Oh, yeah. 3, 2, 5, 10 minutes matter, and we need your child in class. I equate when removing a child from instruction because they're late is like ripping out a page in their textbook and saying, okay, you need to do your work. This needs to be completed. Well, they're missing 15 pages of their textbook because they were absent for 3 minutes, 15 days in a row.
Wow.
And how can you then expect a child to be successful when you are ripping out pages out of their textbook?
Right.
And expecting them to excel.
Right. And it's not even something that they can make up in any other way because you're missing instruction time.
Right.
I mean, pages in a textbook, it's a really great analogy, but it also doesn't replace the teacher actually being there, teaching them the material. And they're never going to get that back. That's not something that they can just rewind like a good Netflix show, you know, and
and
rewatch it. I mean, that's valuable information that they're losing. And I also remember being in school and it all like kind of correlates with each other. So if you miss a day or two, then you're behind and you don't know what's going on in the class. And so it's almost like a snowball effect.
Right.
So the more you get behind, the less that you understand in the class of what's going on. And then you have, well, some families can do tutoring to make up for it, but not everybody can afford a private tutor. So then you have the families that can't afford a private tutor. Their kids are falling further and further behind. And they also have a stigma that, oh, I'm just not smart. I just don't understand this. When really they are smart, but maybe they just got to class 5 minutes late and now they've missed a whole day. And then, you know, it builds on.
Yeah. Right. And again, like you said, if that family does not have the resources to close the gap, and tutoring is very expensive. Mm-hmm. Private lessons and tutoring is very expensive. Again, you compile that with a parent that works a night shift. Mm-hmm. I can't sit down and, you know, analyze what's in the backpack and the grades being missed. And again, you're essentially punishing that child for circumstances that are beyond their control.
Yeah.
So again, we have to think long term. We can't just throw spaghetti on the wall and assume that it's going to stick. We've got to stick to what is working in other school districts. Mm-hmm. What are other school districts in Leon County or beyond doing to ensure that students are not missing so much instructional time? How do we be proactive? How do we campaign and message the importance of being on time and, you know, showing up to school regularly? Mm-hmm. And again, a school that has over half of their students already not showing up, I would be very surprised if I would not be surprised if we see those numbers worsen for years to come.
Okay. And because you kind of have a little bit more insight, does that also affect whether they come to school for the whole rest of the day? If they know, hey, I'm going to be late, I'm going to be sent to ISS, I'm just going to skip today. It's too hard to get to school. It's raining. I'm already running late. I'm just going to stay home. Would that play a role, do you think, in like a student's mentality of whether or not they even should even attempt to go?
Yeah, absolutely. Because again, the numbers are already there. It shows that their students don't come to school.
You've mentioned that you work in other states and that Florida has different statutes and legislature. Does that play an impact on what we can't do? Like, can we look at other states and say, hey, let's look what they're doing well. They have low attendance and let's start implementing that. Is there anything that's stopping us from doing that?
Well, there has been attempts in the past to update the attendance legislation. It did not pass, I think, because maybe at the time it maybe wasn't as much of a priority. Okay. So I did speak before the Florida legislature about attendance and chronic absenteeism. And I remember reading some of the numbers in the representative's district and they were like, wait, what? Like, I mean, their eyes were just, so I think a lot of it, again, it goes back to awareness mm-hmm. and educating the community around the importance of showing up and being on time. Again, not negating that, we're not saying that being late is okay, but we understand that it's a symptom of a much bigger, and usually it's social and economic challenges. And so again, it goes back to, again, how do we educate the community about this? So if you looked at pre-K attendance rates, it is really, really, well, there are chronic absenteeism rates. It is extremely high. It's higher. It's as high as like our high school. So there's like a curve.
Okay.
So it's really high in pre-K, kindergarten, first grade. It dips down and then it skyrockets again in high school. And again,
that's interesting.
It is. And it's like that across the, and it doesn't matter what state, that's the pattern. It's this curve. And so what that tells me is, it, my opinion from talking to families and, you know, being, you know, providing TA, is that there's like this misconception that pre-K is not as important as like third and fourth and fifth grade. And so it's like, hey, if they're going to miss 2-3 days here and there, it's okay. And so again, how do we reverse that way of thinking and educate and again, raise awareness with mm-hmm. families that school is important and we need you here.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Which it got me thinking too, what are some of the reasons that I guess people miss school? Because I mean, there's a lot of, I guess, punitive, mm-hmm. Consequences if they miss school, right? And a lot of the parents are now starting to feel that I've talked to have talked about like the culture of the school, right? The bullying. But what is like your research kind of pointed towards, like, I guess, is a general reason for absenteeism?
So misconceptions is one. And again, we see that with much younger students. There's also aversion to school. So again, I've gotten inboxed messages from teachers at Godbean. They're like, well, they're here, but they're not coming to class, right? Okay. Again, why aren't they coming? Are they bored? Do they not see the connection between what's being learned in the classroom and where they want to be in 5, 10, 15 years, right? Do we need to make those connections? Mental health is on the rise. So it's not only the students where we're seeing a rise in anxiety and depression, but it might be a mother who can't get out of bed and she's just going to get out when she can and get her kids to school. So that we see that with the whole family unit. Okay. And then, of course, you have your social and economic challenges, right? So again, not having a paved sidewalk for students to walk mm-hmm. to school. There's a company that we worked with and they collected reasons for absence and it's like over 500 like reasons why. Oh,
so it's like very, it spans a lot.
Right, right. And again, okay. We have to match the intervention with the reason for absence. So again, we know at Pine View, the principal realized that kids weren't coming to school because they didn't have clean clothes, right? Mm-hmm. There wasn't, the consequence wasn't, well, you're not going to make up your assignments because you're not coming to school because you don't have clean clothes. The correct intervention was getting a washer and dryer. And so she saw a reverse in numbers with that intervention and support. So again, throwing kids in ISS, understand why they're not showing up.
Yeah. And then really kind of being that community that shows up mm-hmm. for them so right. that they want to show up and be at school. Because if they have clean clothes, if they have a safe environment to be in, and all these different factors might direct whether or not they go to school and whether or not the parents even feel like they need to go to school. I've heard like mm-hmm. a lot of parents say, well, my kid's mental health is more important than, right. you know, education. And so making sure that the kids have a healthy balance of mental health there too.
Yeah. And there are states who students, I think maybe New Mexico, where students are allowed to miss school. It's considered an excused absence if parents call and say, look, they're having some mental health challenges and they need to stay home for today. Mm-hmm. So again, taking those things into consideration, then I don't think that's in school board policy.
Yeah, I'm
not or because sure. Again, I have a child in public school and I don't believe that that's a reason. That's okay. That's not a valid reason a child can make up work. And so again, it's thinking about, well, what are the issues in this particular zip code or in this district? And again, aligning those into proper interventions okay. to really get to the root cause.
So is this a district thing to tackle? Is it an individual school? Is it an individual teacher? Is it all of it then? Because
yeah,
it's kind of
question. Yeah, it takes the whole village, right? I have a colleague, I think she's from Ohio. She worked at a school district and her initiative was strictly attendance. And they had the local college, you know, do commercials about the importance of showing up. They had barbershops, had signs that says like attendance matters. Teachers were involved, bus drivers, nurses. Anyone that come in contact with a student should be aware of what the attendance goal is, because you cannot engage students, you cannot move numbers, you cannot improve reading and math if the students do not show up. And so again, it's a all hands on deck approach, but it has to come from the top. It yeah. must come from the superintendent, school board members are championing what this initiative is. And unfortunately, I have not seen much of that to the yeah. extent that I would expect it to happen, and the extent of where I see other superintendents and school board members that are just championing showing up.
Yeah, because when I look at our governments, right, I see them very like divided as far as you have the school board in this box, you have mm-hmm. the city in this box, and you have the county in this box. And it sounds like what really needs to happen is the school board needs to be saying, hey, we need y'all's help. We got to get this message out to make sure that parents are taking their kids to school and that kids are wanting to go to school. And if we start getting the whole community involved in that way and bringing in our partners, right, we have mm-hmm. tons of county commissioners, you know, and city. But we have tons of commissioners then that could help push these like promotional things saying, hey, get your kid to school. Make sure that your kid's attending, and doing it in a loving way, right? Yes. In a we care way, not in a you know,
yeah, rule violation punish. We want to move away from that,
or measure. Even shaming, right? Like right. we don't want to shame anybody because life's hard and things are difficult, and so it's like, hey, do you need a bus pass to get your kid to school? Like, let's figure out how to make that happen. So
absolutely. And I will say for the record, the state of Florida has recognized that punishing students for not showing up to school is not an appropriate intervention, which is why it is written in state statute that you cannot suspend students for missing school or being tardy. And so when we have schools and districts that says, hey, we're going to circumvent that process, we're not going to do out of school suspension, but we're going to do in school suspension, that's problematic.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I would love to see legislation add in something like ISS. Well, and not necessarily ISS, but students should not be punished and miss instruction. Okay. Because again, I think what we're seeing in Leon County is that they're circumventing the process by doing ISS during instructional time.
Yeah. Well, so it needs to be something that says any discipline cannot interfere with any educational time.
Absolutely.
And that way it covers it not just for being late, but any discipline at all. Because there's conduct discipline and things like that, but you want to make sure those kids are still getting that education, even if there is behavioral conduct. Absolutely. I feel like that's something that they still need to make up. And there needs to be something that makes that up for them. And I understand there are classrooms that kids have to be removed, right?
Right.
And this kind of goes in, I've thought about this a little bit too, is the more resources we put into the classrooms, the easier it is for teachers to be able to manage the classrooms behaviorally. If we have paraprofessionals in there, right? If every single teacher can get a paraprofessional, a kid comes in late, the paraprofessional can just say, hey, come on, come over to your seat, sit down, and can handle that and say, here's where we're at in the book, you know, and show them that so that they're not disrupting every, hey, where are we at? Hey, you know, and then the teacher can keep on teaching. And then again, I always believe in paying teachers more and paying support staff more. So we pay, if we pay more, we get, you know, teachers who are excited to be there because, hey, they're at least making a livable wage, you know, and I mean, the teachers that we have, they do it because they truly care for our kids because it's certainly not for the paycheck. They need to be compensated for that too. And so I'm just seeing kind of like how all these things work together to make this culture and this environment for these kids to come in and then feel like they're welcome, you know, because a teacher who's not worried about her bills is happy to see a kid, you know, even if they're late, they're it's fine because her bills are paid and she's not worried about whether or not the power is going to be turned off that week.
And that's, we have a framework that we use. It's called the positive conditions for learning. And it's, I think there's one, two, three, four, there's five pieces. So one is our students academically engaged to belonging and connection, right? Do they feel connected to their peers? Do they feel connected to an adult in the building? Then there is emotional wellness with peer to peer. And then as a teacher, are they happy? Are they in a good space? Do their conditions in the workplace support them to show up and be ready? Then there's relationships. And I'm missing what the last one is. I think it's safety as well. So physical and mental safety. So again, rather than jump to punishing, it's like, are we checking off all these boxes? Do our students feel safe? Is every child connected to an adult in this building, or do they have a friendship circle? Do they, I think we said physically safe, do they have relationships? And then again, there's that emotional piece where, you know, if there are mental health challenges, that we're finding resources to support that.
Right. And making sure the resources are in the classroom.
Right.
You know, making sure that, like you said, we're finding resources, we're funding the resources. I hear a lot of parents, especially in the ESE world, that talk about that their kids don't have the curriculum that they need. They don't have the resources that they need. And so a lot of them just don't want to take their kids to school because of that, you know? And again, this goes into, there's so many issues, you know, there's so many like things, but there's a huge population of the ESE community that is withdrawing their kids from schools altogether and doing the homeschool, which, you know, we've heard a lot from the district about getting enrollment up, right? And this is some of those easy things where it's like, let's make sure that we're meeting all of their needs and that we're listening to these parents explain this to us.
Right. So again, what does the data say? And if we don't have the answers to that, we're going to continue to see families leaving the school district and looking for an environment that supports their children physically, mentally, emotionally. And it's really that simple. So I think we've got to put in the legwork, and we can't subscribe to these very antiquated models because parents have choices now. They don't have to attend their local schools. And so again, when we see so much of what we've seen at the school board meeting, the issues of Kate Sullivan, we have this, again, this ISS policy. We have to stop and ask, like, what exactly are we doing? And we need fresh, new ideas to the table. I'll give you an example. So at my son's school, if I decided that I wanted to have lunch with my son, and I wanted to bring a friend, I am now not allowed to do that. It's against school policy. Well, I said, well, what if I'm on that child's, you know, emergency contact? The answer again is no. You have to sit isolated on a cafeteria table with your child. When I go to McClay, where my other son attends, I sit with his entire class. I'm opening up chocolate milk boxes.
Aww.
I'm undoing snacks. It's Ivan's mom. Like, look at this. And we're doing this. And I'm just like totally, I don't even really spend time with my son because I'm like the adult at the table and everyone's excited. And again, it's like those really small, that's an easy lift, right? I feel welcome. I don't have to, again, pull Ivan and sit on with him one-on-one. I can sit with the whole class. I can ask questions. I see the teacher. The environment's very different. It's not rocket science in how to make students and families feel welcome. And I think there's so much work to do in Leon County schools of how do we create this more inclusive, welcoming, loving environment for families.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I've heard something similar with like the field trips, Mm-hmm. I've heard that with the field trips, it's very difficult to be able to go on the field trips, to be a classroom. I guess parents sometimes mm-hmm. can come in and help in the classrooms. It's very difficult to kind of get to that point where you can do that. It's, you know, a background check. And I believe mm-hmm. the parents are now required to pay for that. And so a lot of parents are feeling, well, I just want to come help out. And I can't afford a background check.
Right.
You know, and so little things like that, mm-hmm. I feel like could kind of go a long way to helping one, the teachers, because now they have another adult in the classroom who's voluntarily coming in to like
right.
help manage the classroom. And so, yeah.
A lot has changed. You remember when we were younger, I remember my mom would walk. I went to my local school. She'd walk me to school and sit down and have breakfast with me. When I was a school counselor at Conley, parents would walk in. We had a lot of younger students that had like separation anxiety. Mm-hmm. So it's usually the same kids, and they would come in and mom would sit down. I would sit down with mom. We'll talk. And then there's like this warm handoff. You can't do that anymore. Parents aren't allowed in the cafeteria. It's like, do not cross this line, drop mm-hmm. your child off, and we'll see you at 3:00. Mm-hmm. And again, when we talk about welcoming families and improving enrollment, it's like, let's start with those small practices. That's my child. And if my child is starting kindergarten, I have every right to walk with my child to their classroom door and greet mm-hmm. that teacher every day. And you can't do that in most schools in Leon County. And I find that, again, to be very unacceptable.
Since we're talking about school culture, one of the things that I remember growing up, I went to Raw Middle School. One of the things that I remember is we always said that we were in prison mm-hmm. because the building looked like a prison, mm-hmm. right? Everything was a prison. And so like that was kind of how we felt there. And I know that there's been like discussions of like the school prison and the culture being kind of similar. What are your thoughts on?
Yeah, that's interesting. And hopefully I'm not repeating this story because we have to pause, y'all, but we're back. Prison culture is a lot about, again, compliance over relationships, control over relationships. Again, rule, violation, punish. And so there's just those really small practices that we see that I've sat in the cafeteria with, you know, other moms, and they'll say, this feels so much like prison, right? Staff, they're yelling at kids. It's shut up essentially and eat your food. You've got 10 more minutes. So they don't say shut up, but that's the tone. And again, we have to think about how these practices pushes out families and students mm-hmm. from feeling like they're welcome and that they want to be there. And so I mentioned my son, the example with the shoe, the sneakers, right? I have a friend who stuffs folders. She has older students that when they went to that specific elementary school, she went into the classroom, stuffed folders. She knew all the students and what ticked them off and then what made them smile and all of that in between. And now that she has a fourth grader, she's told that she has to sit in the hallway and stuff folders. And she's been doing consistently since he was in kindergarten. But again, when we think about how do we get families to want to be here? How do we get families to, you know, parents are not the help. We are not just there to support a bake sale. We want to be included. We want to see our children. We want to build those relationships. A school policy, I know Buck Lake put out a post that said, look, when you're dropping your kids off, you need to have them ready to go, jump out the car. You are not allowed to get out of your car. That is absolutely unacceptable. That should never happen. That is my five-year-old. It's his first day of kindergarten. I want to walk my child to school, to the front door, and say hi to their teacher the same way that my mother did for me. And parents are now stripped of that opportunity. So again, when we think about like prison culture, it's like, is that what we're mimicking? I understand the need to balance safety, but we also have to prioritize relationships and trust that parents are there with good intentions.
Right. Well, and I had a conversation with another mom, and that will actually be a interview video that we'll put out hopefully soon. Mm-hmm. But the conversation that I had with her, she mentioned isolation chambers and that it's rooms that kids go into whenever they're overstimulated and they need to calm down. And it's what the paraprofessionals are calling it, right? They're calling it these isolation chambers. And, you know, I don't know that if that's like the term that the district is using. I don't know if that's a culture-wide term, but that term right there immediately conjures up images of a prison environment. Right. And just the fact that even if it was one paraprofessional who used that term, right? If it was just one person who thought that, that's because that's what it feels like putting a kid probably into these rooms, right? And so again, you know, are there other methods and other techniques to make it feel like it's not, you're not being isolated in a chamber away from everybody else. You are being, you know, brought somewhere so that you can regulate your body because you're overstimulated, and let's co-regulate. Let's find somebody, a school counselor, somebody who can help co-regulate and bring you back down so that you can go back into the classroom and learn with everyone. Because obviously a kid that is acting up or misbehaving is distracting for the rest of the class. And we all understand that. We all recognize that. But how we treat that child,
right,
you know, when they do that, and what we define the room that we're putting them in,
it matters. Language matters. How we perceive, again, a late student matters. The first couple words of our mouth when they come into the school building, whether, again, it's late, on time, tardy, all of that matters. And I would challenge every school board to have a process where they can examine these anti-family policies, these anti-family language that's circulating in school buildings, and really do a deep dive and really work towards changing the culture and not hiring a company to bring families in. Like, that's not a good solution.
Yeah.
It's, let's start with what's happening in our school so that it does not feel like prison. I do not feel isolated from my child and what's going on in that classroom. Again, if we remember back in the day, parents could walk in and observe instruction and they can see a teacher every day. Those things aren't happening anymore. Mm-hmm. So again, let's really evaluate the policies and practices in our school and start listening to families and not making them feel like they're an isolated chamber.
Right, right. And you know, what policies could a board implement? I like your term too, the anti-family. Mm-hmm. I like that because that really defines what some of these policies are. And so would that be, I guess, a policy of allowing parents to come in and sit in the cafeteria and what that looks like, and how do we balance the safety between a parent coming in to sit and eat lunch versus, you know, someone that might be dangerous for kids, right?
Right. And again, I think it's things now. I love Facebook, social media, because parents are now, they're not afraid. They're going to call out behaviors and practices that's not acceptable, or it contradicts what constitutes a safe space for their family and their students. And so, again, I think there should be a process by which parents can escalate a questionable policy to a school board. And it's heard, it's evaluated, it's compared to, you know, whatever established metrics that they have that says this is acceptable or this is not, and this is why. Again, let's make schools a welcoming place for people in our community, for our families, our students, brothers, sisters, grandmas, whoever is involved in that child's life. And we need to get back to the basics.
Yeah. And I do hear a lot, like, it's all about culture, right? We got to foster a good culture. And I hear that a lot, even in the community, talking about needing a better culture, needing a stronger culture. The kids need to feel a place of belonging. And I do feel like that kind of starts in those schools, you know, and allowing parents to come in, allowing certain things to foster that good culture and create that community with the kids and with, you know, between the students and the teachers and other students. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and there's a lot going on. And again, I don't shy away from calling it out. I'm an advocate, again, for parents and for students, and we need more family-centered, you know, practices in our schools, and that's not happening.
So, well, and I love conversations like this, right? Like, I love that you're willing to call it out and have these hard conversations. I did invite Marcus Nicholas earlier, which we had talked about. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to make it. But I really wanted to have that dynamic of the conversation, having two different perspectives. I did the best I could. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I think we should always value and value other opinions and be open to, again, different thoughts, opinions, but most importantly, root what we're doing in evidence-based practices. And again, as I alluded to earlier, not throwing spaghetti on the wall and hoping that it will stick.
Yeah.
And so I always welcome varying opinions and open to different conversations. So if there's ever an opportunity, again, where I can have a be on the podcast and again, share my thoughts, I'm welcome. I'm happy to do that.
Well, you're welcome here anytime, because I know that we only went through a couple of the policies that I printed out, but there's so many more, and I would love to get your perspective on many more of them. So you're welcome here anytime.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. All right. Well, thank you so much. My name is Anna Marie again, and we will be back next week with Bobby Nahum, and he's going to be talking to us about the tracks at the high schools, about their closure, the history of the tracks. And so we're really looking forward to hearing a little bit more about that too.
Well, that sounds like it's going to be a good conversation. I'll have to tune in myself.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, thank you again.
Thank you so much, Anna Marie.